Okay, today is April 3rd. Yes, April 3rd, 2014. It's an interview with Allison Sewell. Is that how you say your last name?
Yeah.
This interview is being done for our 2011 Capitol Protest Oral History Project, and I am Troy Reeves with the UW-Madison Archives. Allison, for sound quality purposes, could you say your name and spell your last name?
So my name is Allison Sewell, and my last name is S-E-W-E-L-L.
Thank you. All right, so I'm going to turn this up a touch, and I'm going to slide it closer to you.
Okay.
What that means is I'm not yelling at you. I just need to project to make sure my questions get on record. So, but it's obviously more important that your answers get on because it's closer to you.
Okay.
Allison, as I said, the first question is I want to give you room to describe the story that gets you here to UW-Madison. So how do you get to UW-Madison?
I applied to graduate school. I have a bachelor's in German and a minor in mathematics. In my senior year, I was working on a thesis with a professor in the German department at Ohio State University. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do after I graduated, but I liked this research project. I liked the idea of research, but I was only kind of coming to understand what it meant to research. You know, I understood what it meant to teach, but I didn't really understand what it meant to research. But I liked it and thought about grad school because I realized it was possible to go to grad school and not have to pay in the sense that I wouldn't have to take out any more student loans and I would be able to be compensated to some extent. And I didn't realize that till I started looking into it my senior year. Mm. So talked to some professors in my department at Ohio State, and every professor recommended Wisconsin for their German program. And so I applied to Ohio State and to Penn State as well, and I got into both schools and got funding packages from both schools, but Wisconsin's funding package was better in the sense that I got a university fellowship through the graduate school, so I had a fellowship my first year and a fellowship my first year as a dissertator, which is actually this year, and then 3 years guaranteed funding in between there. And that seemed pretty sweet. And I liked Madison. So I came here seeing it very much as like, this is my job after I graduate from my BA, but the only way to move on to the actual stable job, which is, you know, professor, was to spend this time in grad school kind of figuring out what that meant and if that really was for me. So that's how I ended up here.
Okay. So you said you knew that teaching might be part of, you know, being a graduate school or being a professor.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any interest as you were getting your BA in the teaching aspects of being a professor?
Oh, yeah, I did. I definitely. It was more of just kind of understanding even what that meant. I mean, I thought I knew what that was, right? Because I had been in class. I'd been in college for 4 years. I know what that's like. But no, of course not. It's different when you're on the other side of the podium. But, I mean, research was something that I didn't even really know anything about being in. I mean, the math and physics classes and the classes that I took were not really focused on research, as they were more introductory courses or a specific topic that was part of our larger curriculum. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until my senior year when I started asking questions about research in the humanities that I realized even what that meant at a university level to be conducting research, that researchers, faculty in all departments do research. It just is different depending on what your field is.
So did I hear you right? You said your senior year you were actually doing some research in the humanities?
Yeah, I did a senior thesis. It was something where I could enroll in a course. It was an independent study as far as like the course I was taking. But I also basically had fulfilled a lot of my requirements, but I had some that had to be fulfilled and they were only offered certain courses or I could only take so many courses at a time. So doing a senior thesis made sense since I was able to find a professor who was willing to work with me on that. And and then I also got a stipend to live off of the summer before my senior year of college. So I didn't have to have a summer job. I did, actually. I worked at the library, but I had yeah, I had a job basically through doing research, and again, kind of tying in that, oh, wait, I can do these things I've been doing in school, but I can do them to actually support myself in some way, mm-hmm. rather than always working a part-time job that's completely unrelated to my schooling. That was kind of the first time I became aware that that type of work was possible.
What was your research topic?
I wrote about the use of a modal particle, which is a particular linguistic feature in internet speech of German chat users. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at how, so this was in 2009, or 2008, 2009. Yeah, how German speakers who were using this particular chat, kind of, it was like a German version of Facebook, how they were using this particular item of that linguistic feature that comes up in spoken conversation, but we were just kind of exploring how it comes up in written, more spoken-like conversation. Since chat right. and kind of those types of posts are much more like spoken language, mm-hmm. So we were just exploring that and... Yeah.
So had you been to Madison before you matriculated here?
I came to visit a friend of mine who lived here. He went to undergrad here, and I studied abroad with him in Germany. But I came here when I started looking at Wisconsin for grad school. And basically he had said, you should come up to Wisconsin. And I said, oh, well, I'm going to look at this place, so it makes sense, and I had a place to stay, and it wasn't an official visit. I had applied, but I hadn't been accepted yet just because of the timing. I think it was like even before the school year started here, my senior year. And then the German department actually let me know that I was accepted and then invited me for an official visit. So then I came for the official like prospective student visit, but I was at that point, that was in the spring of 2009, and I already knew I wanted to come here because I'd gotten the funding offers already. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting visit because they were trying to, you know, doing the usual like wine and dine, try and convince you to come here, but I already knew I wanted to come here, so it was kind of, it was fun for me, but I feel like maybe they may have felt like they were wasting their time because I already knew, but.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall, what sort of things did you get to do and see on the official trip?
Oh, we met with faculty. I just asked tons of questions and met with grad students. I'm now work with our recruitment and orientation committee, so I know how all that's set up. But yeah, you just we don't have like a big group that comes in at one time. We come in, just individual visitors come in. Mm-hmm. Some departments have like a weekend. We just have individual visitors. So just meet with people, and people take you to lunch and dinner. I stayed in a hotel that second time, and I just slept, actually. I went to bed really early both nights because it was nice to just go to sleep, not have to do dishes or clean anything. Mm-hmm. That was the visit.
So when did you move here?
That fall. So I graduated in June 2009. That was after my fourth year as an undergrad, and then I came here that fall.
So fall of 2009?
Yep.
Where did you live?
I lived in the same neighborhood I live now, actually, over on Gorham Street. Okay. I found an apartment on Craigslist and moved in there. I don't live in that same apartment, but I live in right around the corner. I've stayed in that neighborhood the whole time. That was something else we did as part of our visits, where kind of like ask people about where are good places to live, mm-hmm. how do you go about finding places to live, those types of things. So mm-hmm. I had a pretty good idea that I wanted to live on the east side of the city because it's close to campus and I bike everywhere, so I didn't need to be like right on campus.
So when you said you had a bunch of questions you asked during your official visit, so did you have sort of the series of questions you wanted to get information from faculty and sort of different questions you wanted to get from the other grad students?
I don't remember exactly, but I'm imagining that yeah, I mean, for faculty, it would be probably more about courses, like what types of courses they offer. I mean, thinking about it now, I mean, the questions I asked were just, you know, they were answering what I felt like I needed to know at that time. But those questions were getting at much bigger things that I only, you know, now know 5 years later. Like, so for example, what type of courses someone teaches, you know, it's, and what type of research, you know, how do you go about a project? I mean, I didn't even really know at that time what a dissertation was, or how do you get into a research, mm-hmm. you know, research, mm-hmm. Program. Like how do you, you know, how do you get going with writing your own articles, presentations? Those are all things that I'm sure I didn't ask as an incoming student because I didn't think about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't even remember what I asked. I'm sure I was concerned about, like what types of things I would do in my classes, because all I really ever knew was classes. And again, as I mentioned before, I kind of only understood at a very rudimentary level what it meant to do research. And so now, when I talk to prospective students, when I'm the grad who's talking to prospective students, I don't know, I kind of hear their questions. And so my answer to your question is, I don't really remember, and I'm assuming I asked what a lot of these grads have been asking me, like this week, last week, who have been doing all these lunches and dinners that we're recruiting right now.
I want to get back to one more thing, because I'm interested in a major in German and a minor in mathematics, because mm-hmm. in my mind, those are using sort of two separate parts of your brain, and I'm wondering how are you interested, at least as an undergraduate, in both?
Well, I'm a linguist, so I would definitely say that they're using the same skills, and this, in the sense that, as I mentioned, my research project was quantitative in the sense that I had this data set and I was looking for a particular feature being used in that data set and describing the rules associated with that particular feature being used. So in the sense, almost writing formulas, right, for kind of how it goes, how it's used. As a linguist, I would say that I like data, but I also really like context. And I've tried in all of the work that I've done here so far and in my dissertation to basically just point out that you can do really cool things with numbers and with, you know, looking at, you know, how a particular linguistic structure is used, but you can't ever divorce it from context, because language is used to communicate in context. It's used by people who have lives, who have histories. So that's why I identify now as a sociolinguist. But as an undergrad, I basically started out as a physics major and a math major, and then I switched my major because I wanted to study abroad, and I also did not like physics the more I did it. At that point, though, all the classes were just still really big classes, and I feel like if maybe I had had a chance to, or if I knew, I now know engineers, like people who are professional engineers my age who graduated with physics or engineering degrees, and now I understand a little bit more the practical uses of all these things I was learning in those big lecture halls, but at the time, the courses I took at OSU did not make that clear to me, and so I really couldn't see kind of what I was going to do afterwards. And I didn't really see what I was going to do after college at all until my senior year, and that's a whole different story, but that's how I ended up. The math was just, I had enough credits where I realized when I switched my major, oh, I can just take two more classes in math and I have a minor, because at that point I'd taken so many. So I just finished up the minor because I could, because it was, and I enjoyed it, and I got A's in the classes, so it didn't hurt my GPA. And but as far as like applying it to what I was doing as an undergrad, I didn't see the connection until I realized, oh, I like linguistics. That's the part of studying the German language, German varieties, and now I also study English varieties too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how I see math and German kind of being together. It's rather than analyzing a data set that involves, you know, variables that are just abstract symbols as you would in mathematics, or, you know, that are numbers that have certain properties, I'm doing the same things a lot of the times, the same questions, but I'm asking them about a language system.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. All right. So let's get back to Madison. So you come to Madison, you have an apartment. Where are some of the places as you start to become familiar with your part of the town and campus? Where are some of the places where you start to hang out?
Well, I got involved with the shuffleboard scene at Woody and Ann's over on the east side. Do you know that place? Mm-hmm. Woody and Ann's is just a It's called a dive bar. I didn't know what a dive bar was till I went to Woody and Ann's. I mean, people describe it that way. So maybe that means something. But they have a shuffleboard table, an original shuffleboard table, like from like 1920. And it's some guys in my department played shuffleboard there on Thursdays in the league. So I would go there and we'd play shuffleboard. And we were definitely the only people from the university who drank, let alone like hung out once a week at this bar. But it was cool because we got to know a lot of other people in Madison, a lot of other social scenes. A lot of people had like a work group. So there was a group of social workers, for example, who were in a shuffleboard league. Mm-hmm. Some were just like kind of friends that lived in the area. A lot of people who worked in like the dining industry, so like wait staff and other people. That was like kind of, they would do the same thing. So it was fun to do that and, I don't know, kind of get to see something outside of the university. But I basically just hung out with people in my department and other grads that I met on campus. And I got involved with the TAA. That's the other social. I got involved with the TAA right away, actually through Bill, who was in here before. He's been here at UW for a while. And he you heard him talk about his dissertation, right, with like workers' movements, and he's been involved with the TAA, and he, as an experienced grad, I was a new grad, kind of encouraged me to get involved. But also at that time, those same guys I played shuffleboard with were also involved with the TAA, and so yeah, so I got involved in that, and that was also kind of, it interested me, not only because I got to meet other people as a social thing that I was involved in, you know, as I didn't know a lot of people here, but also just I had knew nothing about graduate student workers, and I knew nothing about thinking about myself as a worker, and in that sense, as a graduate student worker. I didn't think of faculty or academic staff or people who made a university function as workers in the same way as I do now, for sure. You know, as teachers, my dad's a public school teacher, and I didn't think about that type of stuff in that way. So my involvement in the TAA was something social, but also something that really, I think I just kept going back because I was learning and I like to learn. So it was, related to that as well.
So did you continue, or have you continued to hang out at Woody and Ann's, or was that something that you did sort of early on?
So, we played shuffleboard there all the way up until last year, but these guys graduated, and when they graduated, our team fell apart. Basically, one guy graduated first, and the other two were the semester right afterwards. They were much further along than me. I mean, they were all in their third, fourth, or fifth year here when I showed up, so... So that's the only reason why. I'm actually getting ready to move over to that side of town, and I'm thinking about maybe going back and checking it out. But no, that basically was like 2012 and 13 were like the last years that I hung out there.
Okay. So we talked about a space like Woody and Ann's, and you talk about hanging out with other grad students.
Mm-hmm.
Where on campus, if any place, would you congregate with other grad students?
Well, we had a German language table, like the German language meeting once a week, and right before that there was a Dutch language table, and I was learning Dutch here, and those same guys I played shuffleboard with also I learned Dutch from and spoke Dutch with. So we kind of had this routine where we would go to those language tables. It was kind of, you know, you're supposed to do it as part of our department, you know, keep up your Dutch and German in some way. But I mean, I really was just doing it because my friends were doing it, right? That's that's why I went. So that was, we'd hang out, and both of those were at the Memorial Union.
So either inside or outside, depending on
weather. Yeah, depending on weather, yeah. And in the Union in general, just the terrace is a great place to just, people would just either announce that they were going there or you just meet up. At the end of my second year here, I met, oh, that's moving ahead. We're just talking about when I was first year. But yeah, I met other grads in other departments, and so a lot of times we would just hang out at people's houses. Like people would invite people over for a party, or, you know, just, but yeah, nothing, not like crazy parties, right? Just like, oh, we're gonna hang out and like have snacks and drinks and hang out at Bob's house this week, and then next week this person's house. So that's that type of get together. Pretty low-key, and not super frequently, especially my first 4 years here, when I was still in coursework. Social lives are limited.
So you joined the TAA. Your first year here, you said that was, you were on a fellowship, is that correct?
Yeah, so I was an associate member my first year.
So what does that mean in terms of, did you have to teach? Were you teaching?
No, I didn't have to teach. But I knew I was, right? I knew I was going to. And that happens with grad students a lot, where your funding situation changes, whether it's for a year or just a semester. That time, you know, we were all paying dues regardless, because that was before 2011, right? So, but not as fellows, actually, right? So, but all my colleagues that were TAs and PAs were paying dues to the TA, and the TA was advocating for them. But, you know, the year that I got here, they were doing stuff that surely would affect me the next year, because I knew I was going to be a TA the next year, for the next 3 years after that. So I just paid lower dues, and I had to actually sign up, like, I had to give them, like, my information to get my, I think I actually wrote a check or something, but I had to, like, do my dues differently, right, because I wasn't getting this, like, or maybe we did do direct deposit, but anyway, it was different because it wasn't just automatic, like, I had a teaching assistant, so that I was paying dues. I had to actually, like, say, no, I'd like to be an associate member, and then I was an actual, like, member based on our dues structure my second year here when I started teaching.
So that first year, you're paying dues, you're an associate member. Do you recall, I mean, you say that there would be things that were happening that year that would impact you as a later on. Were there specific events going on that first year?
Yeah, well, it was actually, so the leading up to, the big thing that leading up to, the big things that happened before 2011, right, which we, before that spring, were the seg fee increases. So I got really involved. I was already involved in the TA, as I said, for like a social aspect, meeting people. And I kind of got to know how the organization functioned, what all the different things that went on. And I worked I helped out with the orientation events. So, I mean, I attended all those the first time around, but then in the fall, we started planning, like, what are we going to do for incoming grads? So I was like, oh, I had a good experience this year with that, so I'll help with next year. But then there was the SegFi campaign. Do you know what I'm talking about, the SegFi campaign?
Well, I do, but we don't know who's going to listen to this. So
yeah,
I'm gonna
yeah, okay.
Give some space to talk about that.
Sure, okay. Basically, the Rec Sports wanted to pass a referendum through an ASM election or through a student body election. They wanted to redo the gyms on campus. And so they just announced that this referendum was going to be on the ballot. And if it passed, it meant that our segregated fees were going to increase. I should also say that when I was a fellow, right, I didn't pay segregated fees. Fellows don't pay segregated fees. And nobody had told me about segregated fees. So I found out about them at a TAA meeting when people were complaining about them. And I was like, what are you talking about? We don't pay anything. And then I found out not only that we pay something every semester, but every year. And I've actually gone and changed that now in my department. This is part of our recruitment materials. Very explicitly says, like, if you have this funding package, this is what this means for segregated fees. Mm-hmm. And when new grad students come here, that experience that I had, I've tried to change that now for grads coming into my department, because I found that was a very unpleasant surprise. And showing up and finding out that your first paycheck is null because you pay your rent and you pay your fees and then there's nothing left. Mm-hmm. And so I was counting on that first paycheck and then found out, oh, wait, doesn't actually go towards my food anymore. So I found that out through discussions that other grads had. They share that information with me. So when Rec Sports wanted to increase the segregated fees or wanted to pass a plan that would increase our segregated fees, the membership, we basically in a meeting were just like, let's try and stop this because we don't want to do this, we don't want to not pay anymore. So I worked on that campaign. And the referendum failed. So, it was a huge group effort, but the TA definitely spearheaded getting the word out to undergrads that this was going to affect them, and just kind of letting it known that people really didn't want this. I think that's like the highest voter turnout for any student election in the history, or the recent history. Mm-hmm. I'm making that up. I don't have evidence of that. But that's what, because we looked at the statistics and it was like, whoa, normally not this many people participate. But it was definitely a get out the vote push for people to vote no at that time. Also, I should say, that involvement, our work there, we've seen in the recent rec sports referendum that just went, just passed in 2014, that process was totally different than the first time that happened. And we were told explicitly by rec sports that the TAA's actions in 2010 had a direct influence on how they went about communicating with the student body about this current campaign. And they actually asked the students this time before they planned too far ahead, and just they actually have been very open, very transparent, and so at that time I didn't at that time we just wanted to stop it, and also but also change the way that particular behavior was done, as far as just saying, hey, we're gonna just charge you more money, we're just gonna charge more fees, and just expect for the students to accept that. Mm-hmm. And not for rec sports and the administration to not even look at other options for funding these building projects. And so part of that was, even if that referendum had passed 2010, I wanted to at least let it known that, this is not something people are necessarily happy about. Like, consider doing this another way. And mm-hmm. It seems like we were somewhat successful with that. So,
mm-hmm. So I want to continue talking about the first year, your first year here,
okay,
for a little bit more. Specifically, that's your first year of graduate school, and you are doing coursework.
Yep.
So I wonder if you could talk about comparing graduate school coursework to the coursework you had done, even as an upper-level undergraduate course. What's the difference?
Oh, there wasn't much of a difference. just different topics, really. Mm-hmm. Different topics, and maybe a lot more, it depends on the professor. Some of the professors in my department, they have you do a final project. It's very open, and you get to develop that, with the professor. But, a couple other professors, I'm thinking of two in particular, it's just pretty straightforward. You get the syllabus, you follow what's on the syllabus, you pretty much know mm-hmm. what's expected of you, what you have to do, and how you need to do that. Within the first week. And that's pretty much how undergrad classes were for me too. Mm-hmm. They're just about different topics, really. We didn't offer linguistics classes specifically on the areas of Germanic linguistics that I took courses on here. We didn't offer those as an undergrad and at my undergrad. So, but as far as what I did and how I went about doing it, it's pretty much the same. My first year here, because of my fellowship, I took the same amount of courses that I did. So I would say the first year, especially since there was nothing really new, it was, I was on a fellowship, and so I was just going to school full time. I had done that for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it was really that different.
Okay. So then let's move then to your second year, where you are now teaching,
mm-hmm.
or a teaching assistant.
Yeah.
So what was your course load like, both in terms of courses you took and what you TA'd for?
Well, I'll actually say that, you corrected yourself and said that I was an assistant, but in German, we actually aren't assistants. We're instructors. So in the sense that, I teach the class. I'm the instructor of the class, mm-hmm. and I don't consult with anybody else, really. We have support systems in place to ask questions and get help, but that was a lot. And my course, I think I actually still took 4 courses. Maybe I took 3, 4 the first time, and 3 or 3 and 4, but it was really stressful. It was a lot, but I liked teaching, and it was just a different activity and definitely different type of work, like preparing and, you know, like different things I had to do in order to accomplish it. Definitely pushed me, like, as far as me being confident and me just, like, you know, things didn't go to plan. You just have to rework it and you have to just be a lot more flexible with what you're doing. And it's a lot different than when you show up to a class, right? And you're more, you're participating, but in a different way. And yeah, but I mean, I did it, right? I did the courses and the and teaching, so.
What course or courses did you teach?
Oh, I taught, so I first taught first semester German. We usually start with first semester if we've never taught before. And then second semester, and then third semester. So you just kind of move up. I had some of the same students, actually, in my third semester German class that were in my second semester German class. So that's kind of nice. Like, when you move up as a TA, that's something that can happen, is you have students who don't necessarily move with you. They're just, most of them are just going for the time slots, and you just happen to be assigned that time slot. But that's also nice, because I felt like with those students, I definitely was able to speak more honestly with them about, like, growth, because I had actually had them, you know, 6 or 7 months before. And
did that happen? So you taught first semester German, then the next semester did you get to teach second semester?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And was that going to happen regardless? I mean,
no, I mean, from my understanding, that's what they like to do with people who come in with no teaching experience. But we also, you know, like, it's very possible I could have been moved to another slot if they, for some reason, had, let's say they only had a certain number of sections for second semester German, and they had more, you know, new TAs, and they had those slots. I think some of my colleagues who taught first semester with me, some of them either stayed at first semester or did move to third. So I think it's kind of just, we get put where they need us, but I know it's from what I've learned about that process of assigning TAs to certain courses, it's extremely complicated, because we have our own schedules too, right? Like, I have my coursework, we turn in our schedule for what courses we're taking, and so then I have to find a slot that I can teach in, and they have to make sure every course is covered with all of our schedules. So, that was the general pattern, though. Most people followed that, like, just kind of moving up.
Okay. I think you alluded to this in one of the previous answers. I'll ask it directly, though. How did you feel you balanced that first semester that you were now teaching and still taking courses?
Well, I definitely felt stressed, and I remember feeling stressed, and I definitely feel like I would go through much more extremes of kind of very focused periods of time, and also very reclusive periods of time, right, where I would just try and get stuff done, and then I would finally be like, okay, now I can see my friends, or now I can do this. I run, so I always had that, like, time to myself to kind of exercise, but I definitely remember feeling like I wasn't really, I don't know, like, I wasn't really sure what I was doing, and that took up a lot of time with teaching, I mean. Like, I wasn't really sure what I was doing and spent a lot of time kind of playing around with how to do things. I feel like that balance was a lot easier to strike the longer I taught. But I feel like that maybe is how, in my experience, that's how a lot of things are. When you first start doing it, you're figuring out how to do it and how that means, and you get more efficient at it and more comfortable with it. So you feel less stressed, right, as you move on. So I think that is pretty normal, but that's at least how my experience was.
Okay. So how did you learn to teach how to teach?
Oh, you just do it. I don't know. You get feedback from people. You know, we had people observe. I had people observe me. We have to have a faculty member observe us, and a grad student observes us as well. And I did take a methods class, but I took the methods class when I was on my fellowship, when I wasn't teaching. So I was like remembering stuff we talked about and trying to apply it. But really, I feel like I just asked a lot of questions. I was very reflective about like, okay, how did this actually go? I'd have days where I'd be like, this felt good. Why did that feel good? Why did that go well? Mm-hmm. And why didn't this go well? So just really teaching myself, right? From as in like trying to compare different experiences and move on from there. But I mean, my first semester, I think it was a rough time in my life too, I'll say, because I'd moved here with a boyfriend and he had moved here with me, and we broke up the end of my first year here. And that was fine. I'm the one who ended it. But it was kind of like a renegotiation of kind of where I was going, what I was doing, because then I was just by myself, you know, and I had moved there with someone else. And then I started dating someone in my department that fall. So my first semester teaching was also like I was dating someone who was also in my first semester teaching. So that was nice in that we would kind of talk with each other about how things went. And that was, you know, even more than just a colleague sitting down, like we were actually dating. So we would go into maybe a little bit more details and maybe share more about what we actually did wrong or right or something. Mm-hmm. But I felt like those conversations were very important to both of us kind of figuring out like what we were doing.
So it wasn't just self-reflection, although it sounds like you did some of that, but you had a partner to sort of help, whatever you would call that, reflection, dialogue, whatever, to help hopefully both of you do this better.
Yeah, and other colleagues, I would have these conversations with other colleagues who had either taught these courses or hadn't. And we have in our department set up a position called a TA mentor, who is their job is to meet with us as first-year TAs and talk with us about how things are going and observe us. I don't know when they started doing that, but it's a good idea. We still do it. Because it was kind of like therapy, you know, you go once a week. And even if you didn't have anything to say, you'd find something to talk about. And maybe I think that's why I was so reflective. Maybe I got in the habit of doing that because of going to these meetings with the guy who was the TA mentor at the time. And I definitely carry those same practices with me now and the other semesters I taught after that, when I taught second semester.
It sounds like almost a form of meditation where you're instead of sort of the physical, how you're feeling physically, you take space to figure out, well, as you said, this feels good.
Yeah.
When I taught this felt good. Why? Or maybe the reverse. This didn't work out well, or this doesn't feel good, and why? And it sounds like between, you know, your own practice and having lots of good cohorts and a TA mentor that you may have sort of found some type of groove to help you do this better.
I definitely think after three semesters, I came to understand myself as how do I teach? I came to understand what that meant to me a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Or definitely differently than when I first started. Each course is different, so.
So you would say, though, the second year, you said the third semester, so the second year teaching was smoother than the first?
Well, I mean, it's a different course, right? I've never actually retaught a course, so I've wanted to do that, but when you have a new course, you're always, you know, doing it new, and it's hard to know whether it's just because it's the first time. And our second year courses also use a new textbook, so I was becoming familiar with new materials. I had just learned these materials for the first and second semester. And then I taught Dutch, actually, the third year I taught. So I taught a different language, different materials, different, you know, types of students taking that class, different expectations, because Dutch has a different supervisor than German. I had different obligations. For Dutch, I wrote all of the assessment materials. For German, we have much a larger number of people teaching the section, so we rotate who teaches different things. but for Dutch, I wrote everything, and I had my supervisor look at stuff. But so it was a different experience. Every semester I've taught at UW has been they're comparable, kind of, but holding that, I can't not acknowledge the fact that they're also just different, different courses. So
do you volunteer to teach Dutch? How does...
I knew it, and so I learned Dutch at UW. I started learning it because we have to fulfill a foreign language requirement as part of our grad school requirements, another language besides German and English. And I didn't have one. I had taken some Yiddish when I was at Ohio State, but there was no Yiddish placement test or something, so I had to take another language through 4 semesters, or reading knowledge, but nobody told me that I could have just done reading knowledge until after I'd already fulfilled this requirement. So I just learned that last year, that I could have just done a French for reading knowledge course in the summer and been done with it. But anyway, they kept that secret. Like I said, I've changed things now, so that grads now, I'm on the grad policy committee in the German department. I've been on that committee for 2 years, and I'm going to be on it for the rest of the time I'm here, because I feel like we need at least one expert on these types of policies, and I've made these types of changes. So one thing is letting people know about how to fulfill your foreign language requirement. So when you get accepted to UW, you get our grad policies, and you get a little paper from me that says tips to understanding grad policy. And I explain these things like seg fees and all of that. But anyway, I took Dutch to fulfill that requirement. But the idea is that if you take Dutch and you express an interest and maybe wanting to teach Dutch, you let the faculty know, the faculty member in charge of Dutch, and then you have to go to the Netherlands. So I got a FLAS grant and went to the Netherlands in the summer of 2012. So later on, after I'd completed the requirements, after my third year. So then after you go to the Netherlands, you are able to teach Dutch, like you're considered able to teach Dutch if there's a slot open. And basically what it does is it opens up more teaching opportunities, more funding opportunities for grads. It's also, in my case, I had guaranteed funding. So the year that I taught Dutch, they would have given me a TA-ship in German, right? But because I taught Dutch, that opened up a position in German that was kind of planned for me. So it allowed them to fund another grad student as well. So that's something the German department has kind of set up to be a little bit more flexible with their funding, I feel, with grads. So in a sense, I volunteered in that the year that I came back from the Netherlands, I was the only graduate student still here. The other grad students at that point had moved on. So I was the only one still here who could teach Dutch. But now in the meantime, in the last year and a half or so, there's been a couple other grads that have been able to teach Dutch now. So I'm not the only person now. So I would kind of be competing with them, I guess. But as I mentioned, we all have different schedules too. So it could be that you have 3 people who are able to teach Dutch, 3 grad students, but maybe only 1 person's schedule allows them to teach the time slot that the course is allotted for. Mm-hmm. So then they get the slot. So,
how long did you spend in the Netherlands?
I spent 8 weeks there. Yeah.
And was it... did you have to do language training while you were there?
Oh, yeah. So the grant was, I basically applied to and got into 2 language learning programs in the Netherlands. And then once I was in those programs, I applied for the grant saying, hey, I've been accepted to these programs, but I can't afford it. I need you to help me pay for this. And then, but that's what FLAS is for. It's a foreign language area studies grant for less commonly taught languages such as Dutch. They don't have one for German, for example, but they have one for less commonly taught languages.
Okay. So I'm assuming the recorder heard you right. I just want to make sure. So you applied for these first, and you get accepted to the language learning program, and then that helps with your grant proposal to get the money to then actually do them.
Yeah. I'm not sure if really the timeline was exactly that. It may have been that I wrote the grant proposal in such a way where, for timing issues is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly how it went down, but I definitely know the reason that I applied for the grant was to say, I applied for these programs, whether or not I'd gotten in at that point, I'm not sure.
Right. But the application Got you had applied for them. So you're applying for them.
Yeah, it was...
At the very least, you're applying for them and you're applying for the grant to pay for them.
Exactly, yeah. And if I wouldn't have gotten into one of those programs, I would have applied for a different program to go. I mean, the idea is you have to use the grant, you have to have at least 6 weeks of foreign language instruction that you're paying for, so or that you're going for.
So you said you never taught the same class twice. So you taught Dutch, and then did you teach how many different semesters, like first year, second year, and third year of German?
So I taught first year, second year, third year of German, and then in my third year here, I had a PA ship that spring with my advisor. So I didn't TA that semester. I was a PA. And then... when that next fall I did Dutch, first semester Dutch, second semester Dutch.
Okay. I want to take, I think, the rest of the time here. I don't want to start the protest stuff.
Okay.
Because I want to talk about the other aspect of being a graduate student, which is research.
Yeah.
When you came here, did you have any idea of what you were going to do in terms of research?
I had ideas, but I didn't end up where I'm not doing now what any of those ideas were.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do second language acquisition. So I took some, I thought I wanted to research in second language acquisition. But I took courses and became familiar with the type of publications in SLA field, type of research that's done, different methods used in SLA. It was not for me in the sense that, oh, I don't know. I guess I really don't know. I was making that decision at the same time that I became interested in what I ended up doing. So I think it was more of, I realized, oh, hey, I'm doing this other thing right now, and I actually like this more. So so I took a course in 2010, so my beginning of my second year here, about language and migration, and we were encouraged to do a final project, and Professor Salmons was the professor of that course, Professor Howell was also in that course too, I should say. It was joint taught. They suggested that we work with primary sources, work with real data, so just do like a pilot study of something, right? And I asked Joe if there were any German speakers in Wisconsin still. Like, I'd heard that growing up in Ohio, that, like, Wisconsin was settled by a bunch of Germans. And I asked him if there were any German speakers, and even specifically Wisconsin-born German speakers, still around. And Joe said that was a good question and I should look into it. So I did. And so for that course, I ended up contacting a researcher who had done some work in eastern Wisconsin for his dissertation. He was a German PhD student at the time in the early 2000s, or 99-2000. His name was Helmut Schmall, and he had done research for his dissertation over in eastern Wisconsin. And I emailed him. He knew Joe. So I said, I'm a student of Joe's. Who did you talk to for your research? Like, who did you meet with? Would you be willing to share their information with me? So he did, and I... had this man's phone number, a man that was a Wisconsin-born German speaker, Wisconsin-born German-English bilingual specifically, because he spoke English too, right? So I just called this guy, and he said he would be happy to meet with me, and so I went and met with him, and he arranged for me to meet with a whole bunch of other people that he knew. So I did this for this class project, but I really liked doing this type of work, as in I really enjoyed meeting with these people, leading this interview. And so then for my master's, I kind of did more with those recordings I made for as part of that final project. We had to expand a paper as part of our master's degree requirements. So I just kind of sharpened the paper, looked at a couple different things, made it longer. And I told Joe that I was also interested in doing more interviews. So he told me to, you know, okay, try and find some more people. And so I I did, and I found so many people that I couldn't do interviews with them all because I, first of all, didn't, I have a car, but my car is really bad shape and I don't like to drive it outside Madison. I mean, I don't even go in the Beltway if I can avoid it. I just kind of stay in groceries, going around town. I didn't have a good vehicle and gas is expensive. Even if I did have a good car, I didn't have the time because I was teaching and in courses while I was, recruiting all these people and doing all this. So basically, Joe said, well, let me see if I can use some of my grant money to get a PA ship. So then he was able to do that. And so then he hired me as a PA. And I was able to actually go out and interview all these people who had expressed interest to my, posted ads in the newspaper. I had people call me in response to my ads in the newspaper. And then, some of those people would say, okay, I'll help you. I'll be interviewed, but then I'll also help you find more people. So not only did I have the responses from the newspaper ads, but also people that were, personal contacts, mm-hmm. then contacted me oh yeah, I heard from so-and-so that you're doing this, or I'd have their phone number and I'd call them and say, so-and-so said he talked to you about us doing this. Would you be willing to do this? And so my research, that's what it's been, since 2010, really, since that course, that's what I've been doing for research is, working with these recordings and, developing my research protocol, how I do oral histories or how I do, because it's a particular type of oral history I'm doing with them. I'm looking for very specific things, related to their linguistic experiences. Mm-hmm. And we also have them do certain linguistic tasks, so like translation tasks. And we have them do a picture guided narration where they tell a story using a picture book. So I conducted those interviews in 2011 and 2012. And then I went out again in 2013 and showed some other grad students who became interested in this stuff, ones that are in the cohorts under me. And I kind of showed them how to do it. And then they've gone off and done their own projects in different areas than where I work. I work in eastern Wisconsin, Fond du Lac, Manitowoc, Calumet, and Fond du Lac, Calumet, Manitowoc, and Sheboygan counties. Some other grads in my department who got into this, they started working in Dodge, Jefferson counties, and over in Sauk County. And then I have a grant right now, and I'm doing interviews right now for follow-up interviews with those same people now, 2 years later.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So it sounds like, I don't know where oral history stole this from, but it sounds like initially there was some popcorn sampling going on. Which means, you find one and it pops out.
Yeah.
And it pops out.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the next thing you can't interview the number of people that have expressed interest in being interviewed or that people have said you have to interview.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was at then, and I'm at that point now still where I'm re-interviewing people. And but it's not a bad place to be in the sense that you have a lot of interest. And I've gone out, I've done a lot of outreach presentations in these areas. I've gone back out and shared with the people I've interviewed and other community members. We applied for a Wisconsin Humanities Council grant for 3 outreach presentations in the research area in different areas. And I did a Wisconsin Idea seminar. Joe was asked, and he was asked to give a talk as part of that project, and he did give a talk, but I also gave a talk too. I really enjoy that aspect of it too, that it's not just something where I have done these interviews and then the only person that's hearing about what I'm doing with these recordings are people at academic conferences. I've gone to a lot of academic conferences too, but at those places I'm talking about totally different stuff, right, than I am when I go back to the communities. So, and just today, actually, I gave a guest lecture for a course at Oklahoma State or Oklahoma University. My colleague got a job there. She's an assistant professor there, and they're doing a unit on German varieties in the U.S. And she asked if I would Skype in and do a guest lecture. And I've done that. This is the third time I've done a guest lecture in someone's class. So that's really great too. But each time, you know, each audience, whether it's the people in the community, whether it's a group of undergrads in a certain type of course, or whether it's a conference, you know, you have to adjust how I present it. But I've really enjoyed that by going out and making these recordings and doing this, I've been able to look at questions, look at a lot of different types of questions and give a lot of different types of answers depending on who I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. And it's great because all I have to do is go talk to people. It's really fun.
I think we need to wrap up. I need to wrap up because I have another interview here, but I always want to leave the narrator with some space to,
okay.
If there are things on your mind that you're like, oh God, if I don't say this now, Troy may not ask or I may not remember. So anything about, specifically about, you know, the teaching and the research that you've done. I have more questions I want to ask about the research, so I'm going to ask those
okay.
Next time. But if there's anything about, you know, your first few years here teaching research that you feel it important to get on the record, so to speak, before we end.
No, I think that's fine.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well then this concludes the first interview with Allison Sewell. Thank you.
Thank you.